2 Samuel chapter 18. This is the tragic record of the death of Absalom, David's son. Well, we are sort of really geared up to feel ourselves into David's shoes throughout the chapter, because he doesn't actually go out and fight in the battle. He waits for the news. Who's won and has Absalom been killed? I'm sure he had the premonition that Absalom would be killed, because the punishment for his sin with Bathsheba and Uriah was that God would raise up the sword within David's own family. So I think he'd seen Amnon, his son, die, and I think he suspects that Absalom is going to be killed, and yet he's obviously praying that that won't happen. And what I think makes it all the more tragic is that at the time of Absalom's rebellion, when David is on the run from him, and Ahithophel, that's Bathsheba's grandfather, who had once been David's great friend and counselor, turns against him, and so many people turn against him, he lashes out against them in prayer, praying for destruction upon them. And yet when it actually happens, when Absalom is destroyed, he's heartbroken. And he hasn't learned the lesson from Saul. When he was on the run from Saul, he was praying that God was going to do this, that, and the other to Saul. Saul eventually does get killed in battle, and then David is genuinely heartbroken. I think he wasn't theatrical. I think he genuinely was heartbroken. And yet this was the outcome he had prayed for. So, verse 8, the battle was spread over the surface of all the country, and the forest devoured or consumed more people that day than the sword devoured. And it could be said that really it was the forest that devoured or consumed Absalom. Psalm 71, 13, at the time, is clear from the context, it's the time of Absalom's rebellion. He prays that his enemies would be consumed. And now they have been. His own son is consumed in the forest. He is killed by, as I see it, his head hitting upon a tree as he's madly on his donkey racing through this thick undergrowth. And he's stunned and is caught up by his hair. I say that because it says that his head hit the tree. Not his hair, but his head caught hold of the oak. So he's prayed, his enemies are going to be consumed, and the forest consumes them. That prayer was answered, but of course, when it is answered, he is extremely upset. Well, they take Absalom, verse 17, and they cast him into a pit. Psalm 55, 23, David prayed at this time that his enemies would be cast into a pit. And that's exactly what happens to Absalom. Well, verse 19, Ahimaaz, son of Zadok, said, "Let me now run and bear the king news, how that Yahweh has avenged him of his enemies." Well, Psalm 43, and often in the Absalom rebellion psalms, David prays that God would judge him and avenge him of his enemies. Well, yes, now he has been avenged of his enemies. He's got the answer, but he's terribly upset. Well, there is David, as I say, and we're imagining that we're sitting there with David, or standing or kneeling in prayer with David. And there's a watchman who is eagerly looking out, and he sees a man running alone. News is finally coming. But the watchman, literally, that word that's used there is the one who watches expectantly. And it is the very same word used in Psalm 5, verse 3, and Psalm 5 is clearly in the context of Absalom's rebellion, where David says, "We will watch expectantly. I am watching expectantly for you to judge my enemies." And the watchman is watching expectantly, and yep, the news is Absalom's dead. Verse 31, the Cushite comes, the Cushite messenger, and says, "Yahweh has avenged you this day of all those who rose up against you." Well, David has kept on praying in many, in fact, if not all of the psalms that we can clearly locate in the period of Absalom's rebellion, that God will judge and destroy all those who rise up against me. And now the messenger says, "All those who rise up against you, God has avenged you upon them." Well, if ever there was an example of somebody praying for something, and then when they get the answer, this is not at all what I wanted. I want the very opposite. I think, if nothing else, it shows you to be careful what you pray for. Because I'm afraid we tend to approach prayer with the attitude that, well, look, I'll ask God for a few things, and if I get one or two of them, well, I reckon that's not bad, you know. 2 out of 3, I'm bad sort of thing. This is a totally wrong attitude to prayer. You ask carefully, just as the prayer was represented by the incense, which had to be created carefully, so it is with prayer. You're seeking to ask God according to his will. Jesus says, if my words abide in you, you will ask what you will, and it shall be done for you. Because we know from elsewhere that we have to ask according to God's will. But your will becomes God's will if what you pray for is guided by his word. Because his word reflects his will. So I think as you mature spiritually, you get a better experience in answered prayer, because your prayers are answered, more of them, as it were, because you're praying for the right things. You're not going to pray, as I used to when I was a little boy, with absolute faith, kneeling on our red carpet, I remember, in the lounge, with my eyes screwed up, thinking that, yeah, Jesus loves the prayer of a child kind of thing. May I open my eyes, and next, may I see a £5 note on the carpet? And, you know, I wasn't lack of faith. I was just asking for the wrong things. I opened my eyes expectantly in absolute faith. Now, don't tell me I didn't believe, but there was no £5 note on the carpet. And so this is how it is with a lot of our prayers, in our more immature state, I think, spiritually, that you don't get the answers because you're praying for the wrong thing. And as we mature, and this is the great benefit of daily Bible reading, you come to know the will of God far better. And therefore you're asking for things that you know and God knows are his will, and you get them. Well, David was still not quite learning that. He was firing away at God in anger in his prayers against Absalom and those that are with Absalom. And when the answer comes, this is not at all what he wants. And so, as I say, one thing is that be careful what you ask for. Don't make prayer just a sort of a wants list, and you hope you might get one or two things. That's not the way to go. Instead, pray in accordance with God's will, and be prepared to accept that in the more fuzzy areas where you don't know God's will, that his will shall be done, and it's better that his will is done and not yours. I think you also see here how David prayed almost too easily. He saw prayer as a way of hitting back at people. To pray for judgment upon people may actually be heard. And I think when you actually see it with your eyes, you will wish that you had not prayed in that way. I think it's typical of David's character. I mean, there's this great spirituality, and yet clearly this lack of self-control and this hot-headedness. And that hot-headedness, you think of him being ready to kill Nabal and Abigail and all their family. And, you know, he's restrained from doing that at the last minute. But that hot-headedness, I think you see in his attitude to prayer generally, his attitude to all things. And, well, it was how he was. But it's no good saying, yeah, well, that's how I am. We are to learn from these records, because he is very quick to pray to God, and that is absolutely commendable. But as I say, when the answer comes, it is not what he wants. And yet God is also very gracious, very gracious. You think of the times when you've prayed for something and then you almost spend the rest of your life thanking God it didn't happen. You know, think back to earlier boyfriends or girlfriends, and you were so desperate that he or she would marry you or whatever, and then you spend the rest of your life thanking God that that one didn't get answered. And, you know, all sorts of things. God is very gracious, and he sees, as it were, beyond our very childish and limited sort of view in prayer at times. But in this case, the record, as I think I've shown, is framed in language which is plucked right out of David's Psalms at the time of the rebellion. And it is as if to say, it is definitely therefore making the point that, look, David, you got what you asked for. And you've got to be careful. And in the end, the way of grace, in this case with the situation with Absalom's rebellion, would have been to accept that, yes, I have sinned with Bathsheba and Uriah, and this is the consequence, so do the right thing, God. I'm in your hands. Instead of, wow, these people are judging me. Oh, curse them, God, they're judging me and I'm an innocent man. So many of those Absalom Psalms seem to imply that David, as the innocent, is suffering at the hands of the terribly wicked, and he asks God to judge those wicked people. Well, there are times when man does come down very small before God and realizes his sin, but you've got to stay down. You've got to stay humble. And those situations don't arise every 5 minutes. They may be only a few times in your life. But the tendency is over the years to recalculate the narrative and to no longer feel that you have sinned like that. And I think that this was how it was with David, that he felt that he really hadn't sinned and that it was all unfair and he was an innocent man who was being picked on by wicked people. Well, they were wicked, but he was also not innocent.